Hi, welcome to Impact Africa, podcast series on Faith-Based Radio and Podcast. My name is Vanessa Richard, and today I'm so glad to have joining me Cindy Adam, all the way from Kenya. And we will be looking at several issues concerning future of work and the fourth industrial revolution. It's here and it's staring us in the face, and we really need to know and do all it takes for us to actually be relevant and do what we're meant to do. So Cindy, I'm happy to have you join me today.
Thank you, Vanessa. Pleasure to be here.
Okay, so let's go into our discussion this, and I'll start with the future of work. When we say the future of work, what do we actually mean? Mm-hmm. Can you help us explain better what that means?
Yes, when we talk about the future of work, in my experience and in my opinion, is a future where everyone gets to decide what work suits them both best and what opportunities they can find around them. The future of work is one with no limitation. It's exclusively based on what value you're able to bring to the table. Whether you went to school up to college or you went to school up to mid-high school. So the future of work is work that you determine for yourself, that you have the ability to do, and you know you can add value on it, and you know how to sell yourself as a value provider in it, and you know how to connect to the people who need the value that you're willing to provide. Granted, there are some professions that are still going to be very old school. Medicine and engineering are one of those. Law is becoming a bit more, for lack of a better word, catching up to the times. But at the end of the day, the human body will always be the human body, and principles of engineering will always be principles of engineering, you know. Aside from those two very core central professions, and perhaps accounting, but aside from those two core professions, for a lot of other industries, it's a complete and utter overhaul of business, and business as usual is open to interpretation. So that's how the future of work looks like to me.
Okay, let's try to bring the future of work into the fourth industrial revolution, or maybe the reverse or the other way. Mm-hmm. How does these two themes work together, the fourth industrial revolution and the future of work?
So the fourth industrial revolution is an information age, so to speak. Whoever has the most information wins. So data is the new oil. We've heard of that. That is the main reason why we hear words being thrown around like big data, because big data is what essentially will inform industries like machine learning or artificial intelligence. It's the information, it's the thing that makes platforms like the technology that support blockchain, it's the thing that makes blockchain relevant in the first place. So whoever has the most data wins. So how does the future of work fit into the fourth industrial revolution? This is the connection that I personally can see. If you are able to have the kind of information that anyone else, the kind of information that is hard for anyone else to get, or in the amounts that anyone else cannot find easily, then essentially you are the winner. So how does that translate to a personal, on the ground, individual level? Anyone who can do anything that is relevant to information and data, whether it is translating it, analyzing it, storing it, creating the hardware or software that makes that information relevant, wins. So how else can we think about the whole information and future of work? This data is what informs things like marketing, for example. In my company, for instance, analytics is something that we make a huge deal out of. We want to see how many people saw our ads and how many clicked on it and how long they stay on our platform and what are some of the reasons why they did not click on the thing. All that has to be distilled to the very basic levels in a way that can give us insight that we need. So you don't have to be in big data. You don't have to be in tech. But at the very, very basics of it, every facet of human life as it is unfolding is reliant or is leaving down breadcrumbs of data, of information. And if you're the kind of person who can find a way to manipulate that data, whether it's in marketing, whether it is in copywriting, whether it is in, you know, creating graphics that sell, that's where the future of work is. Having a way to find a relationship with data in a way that makes business sense for a lot of people. So I hope that is clear, because I felt like I was a bit technical, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to
I think it's clear.
Information mentally.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Gosh. Okay. I have the challenge. The challenge is not really a personal one.
Okay.
It's about, I see a lot of young persons, let's say in Nigeria, where I come from,
yeah.
And the pictures I see from other countries, these young persons are mostly the artisans, they pursue the menial jobs.
Yes.
And most of them, if you compare them to the number of people mm-hmm. that are actually data savvy or computer savvy, the percentage on the other end outweighs the other one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do we bring these individuals into this future of work? How do we even help them know?
I feel like that's a really good question. And it's important that we distill the big techie 4IR thing into something a lot simpler.
Mm.
A lot of times, those artisans you're talking about already have some level of data knowledge. It may not be computer focused, but they know. They know where to put their wares because they know the foot traffic is there. I've been in Lagos, and just like in Nairobi, there's a time where you'll find a lot more people selling their wares in traffic than other times. That is data. You know, they know that around this time in the morning or in the evening when people are going to work or coming from work, there's a lot more cars, there's a lot more traffic. It's the best time to sell our things. That is a one way that we can show, we can see data as not something to be done by the Mark Zuckerbergs or the Elon Musks of the world, but it's an actual way day-to-day people interact with data and information. Because that will be the difference between will I sell 30,000 naira worth of, you know, snacks today, or will I sell 20,000 naira worth of snacks today? They already know that, okay? They also know that it is very likely that someone who is buying bread, for example, let's say the market woman in the stalls, you know, someone who's buying bread maybe in the evening, or rice will also want to buy gari along with it, okay? Because they are able to see the number of people who come here in the evening are likely maybe young people who don't want to cook when they come home from work. So when they order one thing, it's very likely that they'll also want to order this other thing because maybe, you know, they've run out of stew, fish stew maybe, okay? Like, okay, so you want this bread or you want this jollof, but are you sure you don't want this fish along with it? That is some level of data because they already know. It may not be so technical, but they already know. So what I could perhaps see, how can we improve the level of data into something that can become even more efficient for them? When I look at society, we won't always be all coders, nor should we be. The world needs artists and singers and poems who don't necessarily know how to code. Okay. Every level of society has a facet of people with a specific function that they can serve the society. Here's the thing. When I think about distilling technology into something, individual people who are not computer savvy can participate in ways that they already do participate in. The most powerful computer we have are the computers on our phones. A simple thing like this, a lot stronger than the computer that took people to the moon. I'm sure you already know that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in a situation whereby a young man, perhaps living in Lagos, for instance, or wherever, can decide, okay, for all these market women or market men or this, all these vendors, I'm going to ask them to give the numbers of their regular customers, and I'm going to call the customers and I'm going to say, Oga, you don't have to come to the market today. Can I deliver for you at maybe 50 naira or 100 naira and you can pay me or something with a motorbike? Then if you can have regular deliveries every day, you know, you providing convenience. And the convenience comes from data. And the data is data, it's personal data, you know, of the phone numbers of the people who buy from this market people. Because I don't know how it happens there, but it's the same thing that happens here. For example, when I'm at, I don't like cooking, I'll be honest, okay? But I do because people need to eat. But a lot of times I have the phone number of, you know, regular, the butcher guy, okay? Or the lady who buy, from whom I buy vegetables or some cooked Kenyan ration of chapati. When I'm in the house, for instance, and I don't leave, I'm like, hey, yo, where are you? Are you, you know, can you bring me XYZ? They bring to my door, I pay them, done. Now, if I had someone, for example, not many people have all the numbers, but if there was a dedicated delivery person to deliver such pictures to me, you don't have to create a startup out of it. You don't have to create, you know, like something huge or no. All you need is a phone. And it doesn't even have to be a smartphone. All it needs is just the ability, just hustle, and the ability to spot opportunities where they could lie. That still is part of the fourth industrial revolution. And I think a lot of it is lost in the big buzzwords like AI and ML and big data. But on a day-to-day, we are in the fourth industrial revolution and people are interacting with it in a way that they don't fall into the neat, complex box that a lot of thought leaders would like us to believe is the only way of looking at what 4IR is.
I think you've been able to simplify that. Okay. Thank you very much. I think the next thing I would want to find out is, like you already mentioned, it's not about the big balls and all of the technical words and high sounding words that comes with the sophisticated data and all that. Yeah. What are some of these simplify skills that a young person can gain that will make him or her relevant?
That's a very good question, because those are some, I'll give you some of the examples of skills that we look for instance. And I will also just reiterate this because I know we had a very long conversation about this. And at the core of this, I want you to think about it, Vanessa, is curiosity, okay? Being curious about the world and what is happening around you and what the world needs and where the world is moving into and the opportunities around you. Curiosity. You don't need university to show you how to Google, okay? And I think Google is available to anyone with whatever mobile phone you have, so long as it has internet connection, right? When move aside from that, some of the simple skills, and I feel like I'm very long hanging, and if you're to do it in a way that is technical or hard but still simple, there are so many, we call them, in the tech space, we call them SaaS, software as a service product, okay? In short, they're just tech tools that people use to make work easier. For instance, I went to law school myself, but the very first website of our company, I'm the one who built it. Can I code for nothing? I cannot code for my life. But there are programs that can allow you to put up a website without having to code, like drag and drop functionality. If you're able to keep appraised with how things like that work, you become valuable. When it comes to things like accounting, right now there's software that allows you to know where to drop what and what and what. If accountants are not careful, they may soon be phased out. But if you're able to know how to work with this software, even if you're not technically an accountant, you win. You become valuable, because a lot of businesses nowadays, how many businesses do you know that write things on paper? You know, like then they add up at the end and use up.
There's very few.
Absolutely. Because now we have programs for that. Things like if you went to school for a graphic design course, for example, we have Canva, and every day I wake up in the morning sending a blessing to the person who created Canva, to that beautiful, glorious woman. I think she's from Australia. She created Canva. God bless Canva. Because Canva allows us to create such beautiful graphics for a fraction of the time, for a fraction of the cost, for a fraction of the hassle. I personally did not go to graphic design school. And when I was starting out my company, I used to create all the graphics. And you don't need university of graphic design to show you how to design on Canva. But nobody can say that you can't do this. No, Canva is there. There's so many tools nowadays that have been implemented and brought on board to make work easier for people. The people who create these tools, they make a lot of money. But on the flip side, they're making our work so remarkably easier. You only need half a day to know how to use Canva, for example. Okay, so things like that. So being able to reacquaint yourself with the normal tools that tech businesses use that would make their work easier for a fraction of the time and a fraction of the cost. If you just know whatever industry you're interested in or related to, find out if there's any tech tools that have already been created to make work in those spaces easier. Email marketing, God bless email marketing services like ConvertKit and MailChimp, you know, or SurveyMonkey. All those things allow someone with no technical background, like yours truly, to be able to do some wild things online. So when we are hiring people, when we ask, how conversant are you with this or that or the other? We're not necessarily looking for you to know everything about it. We're just wondering, how curious are you around the world around you, especially as it relates to the position you're applying to? You cannot say that you want a position in marketing and you don't know about Canva or you don't know about email marketing tools. That in itself says something about you. And there are gazillion and one online courses that teach these things. And a lot of times they're for free. So what we are really looking at is, curious are you around the world, about the world around you, and what have you done with that curiosity? And is it possible that we could leverage your curiosity into something that could benefit us and add value to our company? There's some other things that we strongly consider. I hope that answers your question. So
perfectly well.
Breathe, feel, live, love, learn, grow in faith, and make an impact. Introducing the new faithflows.org app, a new kind of social network that is dedicated towards uplifting the well-being of individuals and communities around the world, where believers can connect, pray, learn new skills, teach, inspire others, listen to Faith Radio, and volunteer for humanitarian missions. Download the Faith Flows app today and start living your best life now.
Now, with all of this, I know that the fourth industrial revolution comes with its own challenges. And yeah, everything comes with challenges, right? Depends on how you try to look at it and work around it. So what are some of those challenges that we can actually look at, and how do we go around it, or how do we solve them or try to keep them out of the way?
Thank you for that question, Vanessa. When I think about challenges associated with the fourth industrial revolution, the challenges, they are essentially opportunities masked as challenges. Whichever side you look at it, you would be right. But it depends on what it is you're trying to get out of the question. Okay? Let's talk about challenges. The thing is, it has opened the world up to a world of competition. So for us at Village to Nation, when we're putting out an ad for a position that we are hiring for, it could be in Kenya, Kigali, Malawi, India, wherever. If you have the kind of value that we want that can serve us, and you'll be interviewed. And if you're the best person for the job, you're getting it. Full stop. It's all about value exchange. We really, really, really do not care where you're coming from. So when you realize this, if you're based in Abuja or Nairobi or a place in Johannesburg, initially at the beginning, you thought you're just competing with other people in Joburg, for instance, okay? Or Lusaka. But right now, you're competing with the whole world. But here's the flip side to that, Vanessa. You too can apply for jobs from wherever. And if you have the kind of value they're looking for, there's no reason why any reasonable business person will turn you down. So the competition has become wild. It really is survival for the fittest. And you will realize that a very select few people with the kind of skills that are very well, you know, very well desired in the world of work and the world of business, they're taking home bags and bags of money. The competition, you could say, is a bit of a downside. I feel like the other thing is there's been a reduction in the human element when it comes to business. A lot of things with the whole automation thing, it has, in a lot of ways, removed humanity from human. You know, and I think I mentioned this story. Someone was chatting with our customer service thing you know, and they asked, oh, by the way, am I speaking to a human being or a bot? And, you know, our person was like, haha, you're actually speaking to a human being. My name is Helen and I'm here to assist you. So how can I help you? Okay. So it's almost as if someone expects to be talking to machines all through and not a human being. I personally prefer speaking to human beings because I feel like human beings still have the brain computing power that plus the emotions and hopefully emotional intelligence that machines have not caught up to. Here's another downside to the whole automation thing. Still, there's a way to combine the human factor and the tech factor. I feel like it could be very easily a symbiotic relationship. The other thing, privacy. I say something here, before I know it, I'm getting targeted ads. Well, I love knowing that I can get what I need because I searched for it. It gets to a level, it's a bit creepy, you know? But on the flip side, as a business person, we have been personally affected by some of the privacy laws that have been instituted. The ability for us to target our advertising has been limited because of some of these laws. So it is a flip side because I want the right kind of people to see our ads and buy from us. And on the other hand, there's me wanting to protect my privacy. So businesses selling things I want, there's a block somewhere that I would wish, I don't know whether I want them to know or they don't want them to know. It's a bit of a conundrum, to be honest, but there are flip sides too, to both sides. So again, it depends on the story that someone wants to tell themselves and what they want out of that story. But for me, I'm all here for everything the future has.
Okay. Now, this will lead me to asking you why you actually decided to set up your company, because I think you have a background in law.
Yeah.
And yeah, you set up a company, an EdTech company.
Yeah.
And why did you set up that company? Like, how did you go about doing it? And what kind of value has it added, and how many persons have actually benefited from this company that you set up?
Okay. So thank you for that question. When I finished law school, I remember very intently wanting to get into a career in the impact space. But all the jobs I applied to didn't want me. I was like, okay, fine, I'll start looking for a job in a law firm. And other law firms are looking at my CV and they're like, you look like your career could be very well in the NGO space. I'm not sure that this is the right thing for you, you know? So they didn't want me either. So I was like, okay, this is a very hard catch 22. So I had two options. I mean, I still had the papers in the law space and I could perhaps master my way into the legal space. But I asked myself, when I turned 40, do I want to look back and say I had climbed a ladder leaning against the wrong wall and I had fulfilled everyone else's dream for me except for my own? Or do I want to find a way to chisel my own space and literally curate the kind of career I want for myself? I chose that I'm going to create the job of my dreams. Aside from that, so I figured I needed to learn. But all the classes I was finding online were classes related to the Western world, tailored for a Western audience or by Western people. And very few of them were very applicable to me in my situation. And I realized if I was having that problem, it is very likely that other people too were facing the same challenges as well. So the journey into building Village to Nation started in a refugee camp in Dadaab, the one that is the border of Kenya and Somalia. And we're setting up a camp there to train young refugee people on skills of the future. We're talking about skills that can allow you to participate in the global digital economy using just a laptop, good knowledge, internet, you know, and maybe perhaps a payment getaway. Okay, that's where we started. It went well until it didn't, and we had to regroup. It didn't go quite as well as we wanted for a variety of reasons. The demographic, the number of things we took for granted that turned out to have been very important. A lot of times you think, people don't have skills or don't have the right education. But a huge, huge part of it that people really underestimate is the importance of mindset. If you're trying to bring in an intervention in an area whose people's main motivation is, how do I get the next certificate that can get me out of this camp and into United States or Europe or wherever? That's a very, very different demographic from people who actually want to learn something and utilize what you're teaching. So there's a lot of frustration with that, to be honest. So we had to regroup. We went to another Kenyan island and that went quite well. Then COVID hit and we had to ask ourselves, okay, so we do offline teaching. We can't reach the people we usually do offline because airspaces are closed and nobody can go anywhere. So we have two options: wait out the pandemic or figure out who we can serve with the information we already have. We figured, what's in our hands and how do we use it? We have the information, we have the proper trainers, and we have everything we needed to just take the first step forward. So we took our first classes online in March of 2020. And from between March and December, we've had around 3,000 students take our classes online. And I want you to remember that last year, all we had was a website, a few landing pages, and Facebook ads. So what we did was just come up with a class, get the right facilitator, set a price for it, put out Facebook ads for it. And when you click on the Facebook ad, it takes you to the landing page where you get all the information of what to expect from that class. When you pay and sign up, if it was free, you just sign up. You get an automated email in your email box that gives you the information on how to join in on the class. That's how we did it last year. And being able to serve all these people for the whole of last year and get exceptionally good reviews told us that people want to learn, and they want to learn skills that they feel like is an investment, and they're willing to pay for that learning. because everyone wants to feel like their life is moving forward and in some way they're in control of the kind of future that is unfolding for them. And one of those ways to be in control is get the kind of skills that you feel will either bring you more money in your pocket, help you manage the money you already have, or take your career to the next level. So that is how we chose the kind of classes that help people grow their careers or bring in money in their pocket, either as freelancers and whatnot. So that's what we were doing the whole of last year. So when we had this, we realized that sometimes we host a class and someone signs in from Nigeria or Uganda, and they only get a snapshot of that class because the context is missing. If you're talking about a class and you're referencing the Kenya Revenue Authority, I'm sure the Nigerians have a version of their revenue authority, you know, your tax collector, your tax collection agency, for instance. It's not relevant. So if you're talking about things like, okay, you will sell this on this platform on Etsy or eBay, and they'll pay you through PayPal, hey, in my understanding, there's no PayPal in Nigeria, as far as I'm concerned, or it is exceptionally harder to find PayPal in Nigeria. Or even if you find PayPal, getting your money from the PayPal account to a local account is exceptionally hard. In Kenya, as far as we're concerned, there are only two ways to get money from PayPal if you have a PayPal account. That is either Equity Bank or M-Pesa. And sometimes we'll try to connect to M-Pesa or mobile money and it doesn't work. So if you're teaching the same class, everything else may be the same, but when it comes to that part of payment getaway, if you're talking to someone in Zambia, for instance, or Tanzania, and they don't have Equity Bank, you know, and they don't have M-Pesa perhaps. If you can figure out the payment getaway, it means that the whole class in a lot of ways becomes obsolete for them because you can't do business where you can't take your money out. So context matters. And that's why we decided to make sure that our classes are heavily localized and contextualized. If you're in Kenya, our facilitators are in Kenyan because we want them to give you information that is ready to consume and implement. If you're in Nigeria, the same thing. So I'll be honest and say, we tested out the Nigerian market working with a very close friend of mine. It was how to raise financing for us as a small business in Nigeria, except we were doing our marketing the Kenya way. But we realized Nigerians see it differently. So you can't copy-paste things from one country to another when we're doing business. And we tried to change a few things. Facebook has never rejected as many ads as it did the way we did when we were trying to put out ads specifically for Nigeria. Like we had around 12 ads we're putting out. I think more than half of them kept getting rejected. And we keep on editing and like, what is happening? You know? But when you target the same ads to Kenya, Zuckerberg's company is okay with it. So there was quite a learning curve there. And it tells us again, Africa is not a country. So if we're to do that in future, there are a few ways we also have to contextualize our advertising and things like that. So long story short, I created Village Nation out of personal experience, out of personal need, to be honest. But judging from all the feedback we get from our learners, and even last weekend, I think we had a class in project management, so micro class, and the feedback we got was mind-blowing. Nothing gives me a higher high than getting the kind of feedback we get from our classes, from our learners, knowing that they feel like their time and their money was an investment. When they pay us, nobody wakes up one day and say, today's a good day to give $10 or 20,000 shillings to a random company that I do not know. I don't know, is this a scam, is it not? You know, they're looking for something specific. And if they come and they feel like we've given them what they came for and even more, that's a high I can ride till eternity. Will you? Passionate.
Okay. Oh, that's quite interesting. Okay, I was going through your website the other day and I found out that you actually, yeah, you make provision for people with disabilities.
Yeah.
Right? Do you want to tell us about it?
Yes. And good thing, you mentioned the website. So we took a break in the month of April. Our developers are working a lot on the back end to change the interface because we realized that the contrast wasn't just right for our users with a visual disability. There's a number of things that, you know, we have disability audits frequently. So why people with disabilities? I'd like to say, oh, we want to save the world and things, and we do. Oh, we want to dominate the world, blah, blah, blah. We do. But it's good business. We just invest in it initially, and we're literally opening up our user base, you know? I don't think there's any other learning platform that has explicitly made a commitment to people with special needs, you know, making accessible learning platforms. But it's a commitment that we have explicitly made. And it's good business. to be honest, because it means that more people can see our content, more people can use our platform, more people can pay for our classes. So why not? On the flip side, and this is very honest as well, the kind of Africa we want to build is an Africa that includes everyone. To the extent that it is possible, there's no reasonable reason why anyone should be left behind. It's an all-hands-on-deck type of situation, which means that if the only challenge you have is that you're deaf or you're blind, but, you know, you can work and things, why shouldn't you be included in building our beautiful continent? Like, there's no reason why they shouldn't be. So we made everything that we can to be part of a movement that ensures that everyone who is able to can participate in the kind of Africa that we want to build. So that's the long and short story of it. I wish it was deeper than that, but that's the truth. It's good business. Why not? And we need everyone to build our continent. So,
okay. This is quite interesting. I think I have just one last question before I let you go right now. There's something I needed to explain. Okay, for instance, I have encountered some persons who find it difficult to make up their minds on career paths they want to go or take. And it's quite difficult for them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, do you encounter some people like this? And what do you tell them when you encounter them? And how do they get about it?
I like that question because I lived it at a specific point in time in my life. And this is what I tell people, especially young people. I say that being a young person, especially in your early to mid-20s or even late-20s, if you don't have a family or kids or anyone depending on you, that in itself is such a privilege. It's such a superpower because you can try a million different things. If something remotely interests you or excites you, pursue it. See up to what extent it excites you. If it stops being thrilling for you, stop it. Look for something else. Do not optimize too soon. I see a lot of people jumping headfirst into doing accounting, CPA up to K. Then they start, you know, the legal version of it up to K. And they've invested so much money and time into all these courses and diving deep. And then they're like, I didn't even know to use this. I don't want to become an accountant. So how we think about it is this. Anything remotely interests you or excites you or fascinates you, try to pursue it in a low, what do we call it? In a low-risk way. Until you're like, this isn't for me. Or, I thought it's just going to be this and it's not this. Allow yourself the ability to change your mind, especially if you're young. That being able to change your mind in a way that doesn't become catastrophic, that is a huge deal. Do not optimize too soon. Alternatively, and this is something I'll just spout here, if someone wants to copy it, they can. The other thing we're putting on our platform is exactly what you're saying, like a technical career assessment tool that you just answer a couple of questions about yourself and your personality and things, and it gives you a variety of options of what kind of careers would be decent for someone with your educational background or your mental acuity and things like that. So aside from our platform, there are a number of places online you can just take personality tests or career tests and things like that. Why don't you just take them? It takes maybe 10, 15, 30 minutes and it gives you ideas. If you don't know what to do with your life, that's not such a big deal. It may give you perspectives that you did not understand before. But the other thing, finally, that I feel like a lot of people really underestimate, Vanessa, is listening to what people say about them. What do people tell you that you're exceptionally good at, usually? I've been told I can be a brilliant journalist. I actually agree, okay? I've also been told, I could make a really good lawyer. I've been told that so many times, and I agree, okay? But at the end of the day, no, I don't want to be a lawyer. Journalist, maybe I could if I needed a side hustle, if I wanted, and if my interest took me there. But a lot of times, what these people are saying is that you are eloquent, you're good at communicating, you're confident. If you can find something that's along those lines that also excites you, that's your thing. Sometimes your gift is right before you. Some people can make best styles out of random fabric and they get compliments all the time, or just have makeup. They can do really good makeup, for example, or just make really nice things. Sometimes it's not too deep. Sometimes you already know what you're good at. The people close to you already tell you what you're good at. But some people are in denial because of this idea they had in their mind of what the kind of career they should have, a career they're not even interested in anymore. But the answer is before you. Figure out what is it that you can do with something you already enjoy and something you're already good at. That literally could be the ticket to take you this year or that and whatnot. So there are a variety of ways that people can investigate what options are available for them. And I'll just end by this. Vanessa, I say that People keep saying that you only live once. I think you die once. You have the opportunity to live multiple times. And between age right now and I'm 27, if, you know, by 33, I'm like, I've done everything I could in this space. There's no reason why I can't completely overhaul everything and decide to become a journalist. I'd be good at it. I think I'd enjoy it. I talk a lot, you know. If you get to a point where you feel like you need a complete overhaul of your life or your career, go there, get that overhaul. Except if you have kids in the family and a mortgage, because that's a bit of a problem, okay? But if it is whatever is possible for you to get the kind of life you want for yourself, the kind of life you're excited to wake up to in the morning and fulfills you and rejuvenates you, there's no reason why you shouldn't do it. That's just how I see it.
Okay. Wow. I think I've learned so much. I'll go back and even listen again and again. Wow. I'm really pleased. I'm really excited to have had this chat with you. And I know that every one person that will listen to this podcast is going to learn plenty from you. This is a whole wealth of information and knowledge you've dished out to us on a platter of good. And I really appreciate you. Thank you very much. Once again, Cindy is the CEO of Village to Nation. I think you need to go check it out and see what these people are doing. They're really doing well. Everything you need, I think, is on that platform, right? Like she said, Google should be your best friend. Just go there and find it and you will get it. So thank you very much, Cindy. I really appreciate.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. Thank you for having me here. It's an absolute delight to have had this conversation with you.
Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it.
Faith Flows is a nonprofit Christian organization. Support us today at faithflows.org/donate.